Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
Governor Andrew Cuomo and state officials this week imposed unprecedented restrictions in New Rochelle and Westchester County in an attempt to contain what is currently New York's epicenter of the coronavirus, of the new coronavirus. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Cuomo says the two-week closure of schools, a temple, and all other places within the designated zone where there are large gatherings of people will help contain the illness from spreading any further.
This will be a period of disruption for the local community. I understand that. Local shop owners don't like the disruption. Nobody does. Local politicians don't like the disruption. I get it. This can't be a political decision. This is a public health decision.
The closures will begin on March 12th and continue through March 25th. Cuomo is also deploying the National Guard to assist with distributing food to those who are quarantined and for the 52% of children who are dependent on the schools for the free or reduced lunch program. The Guard will also help with transportation and cleaning services. Residents other than those already quarantined because they have the virus will not be confined to their homes. They'll be allowed to travel for work and other purposes. Assemblywoman Amy Paulin, who represents the district, was caught off guard by the new limitations. Paulin, who says she received a short briefing from Cuomo administration officials just moments before the public announcement, was scrambling to comprehend what the restrictions will mean.
We all want to be sure that this is the right public health approach, and if it is, we're all going to do it. Not happily, but we're all going to do it.
Paulin says the restricted zone includes a municipal recreation center and the path of a planned St. Patrick's Day parade. She says a lot of decisions need to be made, and she and other community leaders still have a lot of questions.
I don't know what this is yet. You know, I'm looking to see, you know, what this is. You know, are we closing all the businesses? Are we closing just the large facilities?
She predicts many small businesses in the one-mile radius, including restaurants, will likely close up for the two-week period. Cuomo says it's too early to say whether the closures will serve as a model for other parts of the state. He says right now the situation in New Rochelle is unique, and it's the largest cluster of infected people in the nation. The city of Boston canceled its annual St. Patrick's Day parade out of concerns over the virus. Cuomo says he's not recommending that cities in New York cancel their celebrations, though. He says currently there are not large clusters of infected people in most regions of the state.
You look at the map of the state, you have very few cases in some area, and you have larger numbers in other areas, and then you have critical numbers like New Rochelle. So you have to calibrate it to the place. You know, this is such a different situation in different parts of the state.
The pro-school funding group Alliance for Quality Education, which is backed by the teachers' union, slammed the governor's decision to close the schools, calling it irresponsible and tone-deaf. The group says no one in the schools are currently sick with the virus, and they say it will harm disadvantaged children who depend on the schools for services. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, the new coronavirus, also known as COVID-19, continued to spread this week. We saw New York Governor Andrew Cuomo ordering the National Guard to New Rochelle to handle what is a hot spot in New York, where most of the coronavirus positive tests are. And the continued repeated message by the governor to stay calm, to washing your hands, trying not to touch your face, and practicing something we're learning about called social distancing. Many of the colleges in New York going online. And we've seen the governor call on prison workers to make New York Clean a hand sanitizer as a result of the run on name brand hand sanitizers, as well as price gouging of many of the brand names. And the governor was not happy about that. He spoke to you at length also about the legislature giving him new powers for an emergency like this that he did not have before, which allows him to order someone into quarantine and other powers as well.
Well, basically, he is saying, I have some emergency powers. The legislature has given them to me. And he's been criticized for that already by some civil libertarians. But I think people want to stay safe. And I think it's reasonable that he is hoarding his powers and using them appropriately. When he's not using them appropriately, we'll know. Now, he has sent troops into New Rochelle, New York. The mayor says they're not policing and they're not soldiering. So the very fact that they're on and around, I think, reinforces the message that everybody should stay home and everybody should obey the rules about washing your hands and not going out. You know, the governor said something very interesting. He said, I'm paraphrasing him, of course, whether this has been around longer than we think. I agree with that. I suspect we've had this particular virus circulating amongst us before we began to take it seriously and even to recognize what it was.
Alan, we've been talking about Governor Cuomo and his leadership, him being on top of the coronavirus situation, being out every day, updating people, telling them what they're going to do. We saw SUNY schools moving their classes online, telling students to stay home. We have, of course, a legislative session going on right now, and the possibility that it'll be a scaled-down session as a result of the coronavirus. So even politics is limited in this time.
No question. Would you want to get a room in a room full of assembly people or Senate people if somebody had the coronavirus? And believe me, they do and will. You know, the octopus-like arms of this virus go everywhere, and they don't make distinctions. If Tom Hanks can have it, anybody can have it. We're not talking about the great ship Titanic, where they put the rich down below, where they were the first to go. Everybody is at risk here, and we know it. And it is going to affect the way in which we all operate for a long time to come. So, David, I'm telling you now, we're in a major worldwide crisis, a pandemic. CNN was criticized the other day for adopting the term pandemic. Now the World Health Organization says, yeah, it's a pandemic. So cut out the baloney about arguing as to what term we want. This is one of the most dangerous things that has ever occurred in the world. So you get a Governor Cuomo who is the beneficiary in a way, David, of the fact that the president didn't want to be anywhere near it and said this is a job for the governors. Well, once it became a job for the governors, you see Andrew Cuomo on the television, on the radio, on CNN, on MSNBC, in the New York Times, it never stops. This guy is doing what he's supposed to do as a governor.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government, politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York State Departments of Health and Education issued updated guidance this week, requiring schools to immediately close for 24 hours if a student or staff member attended school before receiving a positive COVID-19 test result. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn spoke with New York State School Boards Association Deputy Executive Director and General Counsel Jay Warona about the guidance to school and community health officials.
I really applaud the New York State Education Department and the Department of Health and the Governor's Office for, you know, understanding not only the necessity to get the word out, but to be extremely thoughtful. Over the weekend, all of those agencies were having discussions with the education community about some of the issues that would be presented if schools were closed for an indefinite period of time. And it was their desire to ensure that they not only protected human life, but did so in a way that was the least disruptive. So, for example, the things that are that are in here, but we need to work hard to make sure they're figured out, are you know, kids who are on a free and reduced price lunch, they go to their houses of learning, and it might be the only place that they're going to be fed for the day. So, if a school was closed for an indefinite period of time, that could present major issues with respect to, you know, how kids were going to be fed. So the guidance document indicates that schools should work with community feeding organizations, food banks, food pantries, et cetera, to plan for distribution of food to students, and how that's all going to be facilitated, of course, will need to be worked out on a local basis, but districts are going to have to rise to the challenge because we can't allow our kids to go hungry. There are also, you know, there's information here about how districts should consider distance learning. And, of course, that makes sense. But one of the challenges that I'm sure you can appreciate is the fact that not all students will have access to the Internet, not only because they may live in remote corners of New York State where Internet access is non-existent, but they may be themselves in poverty and they may not have access to the Internet. So we certainly don't want to set up a tale of two cities where we have more affluent kids being in receipt of their educational services and our impoverished students not receiving any educational services. So districts are going to have to make determinations as to how they can make this work for everyone. I know in Westchester County, which is the epicenter of where all of this has started in New York State, at least, you know, there are several districts that are going to be providing distance learning. They obviously conducted an analysis and figured out they could make it work. So, you know, these are some challenges that districts around the state are going to have to face. The bottom line, I just want to point out that in this guidance document, what they do tell us is that if any student or faculty member tests positive for the coronavirus, the school would be mandated to be closed for a 24-hour period, at which point the local health authorities would be working with the school district to make assessments about how much longer the school would need to be closed.
Jay, so what is up to the district and what is up to the state? Is there a clear line there?
Well, what's up to the district is to do the right thing and report to the state and local officials, at which point the guidance document makes it clear that the state is mandating that that building be closed for 24 hours. And then what is up to local and state health officials is to make determinations about what happens after, which, quite frankly, makes perfect sense because, yes, we're balancing local control of school districts against the fact that school districts, the superintendents, school boards are not medical health practitioners, right? So making determinations as to what is in the best health interest of our citizens should indeed be made by our local and state health authorities. So that makes only perfect sense.
Is there anything in there about childcare? You know, you mentioned free and reduced lunch, and I understand why that's in there. But I'm also thinking of these parents who work two jobs or, you know, both work one job, and all of a sudden their kids are home from school. What happens? I guess that's just an issue for the family.
It's an issue for the family, but I will say that this is where I think the governor's office has been extremely thoughtful. As they were thinking about the crafting of this guidance document, there were discussions about whether it was prudent for schools to be closed for a much longer period of time than 24 hours. And I think after consultation with health officials, it was determined that 24 hours for disinfecting a school would potentially be adequate, but for, of course, the follow-up by local health officials to determine that a longer period of time was necessary. But my point is that determination was made primarily because of the concern that particularly, you know, in places of great poverty. The school is not only a place, as I indicated before, for children to be fed, but it's a child care center for these parents as well. So an extended length of time that a school would be closed will have a great effect not only on parents, but potentially on the safety of students, because they might be in an unsupervised situation, and that obviously is untenable.
What is a gray area for you? You're jumping on a call. I'm sorry, you mentioned attorneys from school districts.
Yeah, we have school district attorneys from all over the state that are talking about how they can best be situated to advise school districts about how to implement this guidance document.
And what is it you'll be telling them? And what for you is a gray area? I mean, you mentioned, you know, a day or two for disinfecting the school has been deemed appropriate by the state. And I've already seen some school districts who are doing that now saying we're using a few snow days. What happens if you start to exceed the snow days? I mean, we're talking, you know, you're closed a month or two. What happens?
Yeah, so one of the that specific issue, and it's one of your best questions, is that that's not addressed in the guidance document, but we received an indication from the State Education Department that that issue about, you know, because the way it works, school districts have to be open 180 days in order to get the appropriate degree of amount of state aid. There are discussions about how we excuse that or whether we'll excuse that for school districts, and those discussions are being had even as we speak with the governor's office and the Division of Budget. So they're absolutely being hopefully mindful of the ill effects that this will have financially on school districts. And, you know, I think their first step was to make sure we can avert this health crisis, and then let's deal with all of these other issues in a secondary basis. And I hope, as a matter of good faith, you know, the state is going to make good on that promise that we're going to make sure that we all come together as a family to not only support the health interests of our citizens, but also to make sure our schools can be prepared to provide services in the future by not being bankrupted.
Jay, have you seen anything like this in recent history? Nothing comes to my mind, but perhaps you've seen something that you can turn to for your own guidance.
No, I wish I could. I'll be honest with you. I've been at this job for 35 years, and I have never seen a crisis such as this. And that doesn't mean that we won't rise to the challenge, and doesn't mean that we need to be beyond concerned. I think we're going to do this in the most appropriate way to make sure we're all protected. And I think we'll have a conversation soon about how this crisis has passed. But no, I have not seen a crisis such as this before.
And then, Jay, who are you speaking with? Are you in direct contact with state officials?
Yes. We've talked, our office, I have talked to the Commissioner of Education. I've talked to individuals in the governor's office that are in the process of making certain decisions. We talked throughout the weekend. So that's really what our role has been right now, just to make them aware of the challenges that we're facing. We don't think it's appropriate to be whiny at this point. We think we need to be constructive and to make sure that, you know, this is a situation that no one asked for. But we need to have solutions that are workable, and we've been trying to be part of that. And I have been very, very pleased to see the type of constructive dialogue that we have all been engaged in on behalf of all of the citizens of the state.
Jay Warona is Deputy Executive Director and General Counsel of the New York State School Boards Association.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Vermont Attorney General's office filed suit this week in Chittenden Superior Court against a New York-based data collection company, claiming it has illegally obtained photographs of Vermonters, violating their privacy rights, as well as the state's consumer protection and new data broker laws. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
Standing in front of the court building in Burlington, Vermont Attorney General T.J. Donovan announced that a lawsuit has been filed aimed at protecting Vermonters' privacy rights.
Clearview AI is a company that has collected billions of photos off the internet by screen scraping, applying artificial intelligence technology, biometric data to these photos, and selling them, including photos of Vermonters and their children without Vermonters' consent. We've sued today. We've also filed a motion for preliminary injunction asking the court to enjoin Clearview, stop collecting Vermonters' photos, and stop selling it without Vermonters' consent.
Clearview AI sells the data it collects to law enforcement and private businesses. Assistant Attorney General Ryan Krieger says Clearview breaches websites indiscriminately to obtain the data in a process called screen scraping.
They've collected from, it's been reported, millions of websites. We have strong belief that YouTube, Google, Venmo, LinkedIn, Facebook were scraped partly because they've sent cease and desist letters to Clearview saying stop violating our terms of service.
Public Protection Division Chief Christopher Curtis adds that the company gathered Vermonters' data without knowledge or consent and in violation of the state's Consumer Protection Act.
This company has gone out and amassed a multi-billion photograph database without anyone's consent. Just imagine your home, your workplace, children that may be swept into this database.
Krieger says Vermont's lawsuit confronts myths about privacy in the digital age.
Like the notion that privacy is dead, that our data is already out there everywhere, and so what does it matter? That's a myth. The folks who want to take all of our data want us to think that there's no sense in trying to protect our privacy anymore. Just because you put a photo on Facebook does not mean that anyone can come and download it and apply facial recognition to it and share it with anybody or collect all of your photos together from across the internet. So in our complaint, we allege that that is basically what Clearview has done.
An email from Clearview AI sent to WAMC in response to the lawsuit states in part, quote, Clearview AI operates in strict accordance with the U.S. Constitution and American law. We would welcome the opportunity to work collaboratively with the state of Vermont outside the adversarial environment of a courtroom to further refine our proven crime-solving technology for the benefit of all. However, we are ready to defend our and the public's constitutional right to access freely available public information, unquote. Clearview AI's full statement and links for more information are at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Many people in northern Saratoga County had an unusual wake-up alarm this week. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports on Wednesday's magnitude 3.1 earthquake.
South Glens Falls and surrounding communities were shaken bright and early Wednesday morning. Janet Kramer felt and heard the quake in her Greenfield home.
I thought something exploded in my basement. I thought the furnace blew up because it was like a boom and then the house shook. So I thought something exploded.
Kramer was visiting the New York State Museum on Wednesday, where an instrument called a seismometer measured the quake. Dr. Chuck Van Stratton, the State Museum curator of sedimentary rocks, pointed out a blip along what looks like a fuzzy black line on a monitor.
So that little spike right there that lasted for a few seconds anyway, that was this morning's earthquake at 6:43.
The quake only lasted between 3 and 6 seconds. Earthquakes are not that uncommon in New York, although most are small and you might not even feel them. The quake in South Glens Falls happened along the Saratoga Fault. Van Stratton showed me the fault on a map.
So it's along a fault that cuts close to South Glens Falls beneath the surface, and then comes down through Saratoga, and then comes down towards the Helderbergs in western Albany County. But we've never discovered the fault at the surface in the Helderbergs, like at Thatcher Park or something like that.
Earthquakes can happen when pressure underground builds up and rock breaks, sliding along a fault. While there are many faults in New York State, the state is not near a tectonic plate boundary, such as along the Pacific coast. Plate boundaries are massive faults where slabs of rock that can carry entire continents come together. But the Helderbergs have been active. Van Stratten says between 2009 and 2011, 60 quakes were recorded in Albany County. Quakes with magnitudes between 3 and 4 on the Richter scale can be felt, but usually there is little to no damage. He remembers one quake in 2009.
My wife and I were sitting there. It was like 3 minutes of 9 or something, and we heard this boom. Not fireworks boom, boom, boom. It was boom. And then the windows shook and stuff. You could hear that. Yeah. But, you know, not really any damage. I mean, even for an old chimney or something, there probably wouldn't be any damage. Things coming off shelves, not likely.
Earthquakes also occur in the New York City area and near the northern border with Canada. The largest quake ever measured in New York was a magnitude 5.9 in 1944. That earthquake damaged homes in Messina and across the border in Cornwall, Ontario. For WAMC News, I'm Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2011. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino.